Welcome to Day Zero Update for February 23rd, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Denra Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news here, as we've got a number of things happening this week and next. We got potentially big announcement happening for next week, I think it is.
Yeah.
Concerning a series that has not had much going on lately. We got a showcase happening later this week, though I think also there's the ID at Xbox showcase that's also happening tomorrow. So we'll see what gets announced there. We got Nintendo shutting down one of their little programs, rewards programs, as well as a number of games selling pretty well, and a number of layoffs and stupid developer news stuff going on. A couple of important people that passed away. So
yeah,
we'll get to that stuff here later, but we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Avowed. I have about 6 hours in that right now, and that has been a pretty fun game. It is set in the Pillars of Eternity universe. Though I have no experience with any of those games. That is sort of one of the things that Obsidian did before they got acquired by Microsoft. And so I don't really know where this game's, you know, is set amongst any of that stuff. But yeah, your character is what they call a godlike, essentially that has been a person that has been touched by a god.
And yep.
Usually has this sort of fungal or plant sort of stuff on their face. And your character does not know what god they are touched with. There's a little bit of like amnesia to that. But you get to pick what kind of face covering you have. You can also, if you don't like any of that, the way that stuff looks, you can have it at least cosmetically not show, but it'll still be a factor in the way people talk about you and to you. Because yeah, I saw some of that and it looked a lot like the clickers from The Last of Us. I was like, I want one of these, but I found one that looked pretty decent. So that's the one that I went through. And sort of a Souls-like way, you pick a like an origin story of sorts that decides how your stats are going to be initially set up. So as you level up, you can put your points in any of them and sort of bounce them out, or you know, tip them whichever way you want to go amongst the sort of classic kind of RPG stats. And so yeah, the I picked an envoy for the Emperor. It seems like all the history, like backstory stuff you can pick, tends to involve you getting chosen by the Emperor to be part of their crew for whatever reason, whether you're maybe a soldier in your past, or somebody who you know, is incredibly smart or talented with magic. That kind of stuff ends up getting picked for the Emperor's crew, and you're kind of sent on this voyage to figure out what's going on with this plague that is happening that is called the Dream Scourge, which coincidentally makes people and creatures that have it, you know, have like a fungus look all over their face. So occasionally you get people that confuse what you have for that. Because it seems like the godlikes may have thinned out in numbers at some point. So you're kind of a rare sight for some people. But yeah, as an RPG here, it very much has a Skyrim kind of feel to the way that they've set this all up, because you have weapons you can hold in your left and right hand. Though, unlike Skyrim, I would say the combat here is a bit more fleshed out and all that, because you got you know, dodges and parries and all this kind of stuff going on. You got extra moves beyond just using the left trigger and right trigger for whatever you're working with. And if you explore early on, you'll probably get like one of each kind of weapon, so you can kind of play around and see like what fits the way you want to do things, whether you want to go magic oriented or combat oriented or ranged, that kind of stuff. They start you up, at least I started with a dagger and then picked up a two-handed bow that you get like an alternate set of weapons, sort of like a shooter. And so you can kind of set up both of those for what you want. Which right now I have a set up with a sword and a pistol, and my backup is this sort of magic set up with a wand and an elemental book that gives me spells with that. I've not delved too much into the magic stuff just yet, because it just hasn't been a great thing to deal with in the hectics of combat. But yeah, the biggest challenge I have is just trying to stuff out is realizing I have the dodge and kind of doing that more often. The where I'm at, I've picked up tons of food and such that I've cooked and made into other things that can give me more health back and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not really, for lack of ways to heal myself, sort of like a Skyrim where you end up with a ton of stuff in your inventory for that. And sort of like a Skyrim, you do have encumbrance, though here I think they deal with it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Where once you get encumbered, you can go and look through your stuff, and you have a button to just literally send it to your like camp's chest, without having to like physically go back and find a place to store it, that kind of stuff. So that makes it a bit more user friendly on that front, to be able to manage what gear you're picking up. And yeah, I believe it is just weapons and armor that has weight to it here. So materials and food and potions and all that kind of stuff does not count for that, which can be a very nice, helpful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Encourages you to kind of pick stuff up. But yeah, unlike an Elder Scrolls kind of game, there's not a ton to pick up. You don't just have a bunch of random bowls and pieces of trash essentially that you can pick up. It's all basically materials, gold, food and such, weapons and armor and that kind of stuff to pick up. They get a highlight so that you can kind of better see it. And on the mini map, they show you icons for at least like fallen enemies that have items to pick up, and like plants and such that you can harvest from, that kind of stuff. Though I kind of wish they showed chests and such, because there are chests that have a lockpick requirements, because there's no lockpick minigame here. It's just more like the chest requires two lockpicks and you have to burn those two to open it up, kind of thing, and you just hold down a button to do that. So it's definitely kind of free from a lot of extra minigame stuff that you would expect out of these kind of genres, as well as extra inventory management and all that. So yeah, it kind of makes it a bit more of a more streamlined experience. And so far the story's been pretty good from what I've played so far. Basically, I'm doing a lot of main story stuff, though I've done a couple of side things, though sometimes it feels like you need to talk to everybody that you see, because you will run into side quests that you don't expect from people that maybe don't initially look like they are going to be offering something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you do get companions that help you out, and you get abilities you can use from what they have to offer, whether they're for combat or for, opening up passages and such in some of these areas, which is nice to see out of this. The main one that I have right now is a character named Kai, who I believe is voiced by Garrus's voice actor.
Mass Effect. It is.
So that is a nice little blast from the past there. For that, he's like a fish man, essentially. big guy with blue skin and like razor sharp teeth.
Yep.
And he's been pretty fun to have along. Does some fighting, not really like anything substantial. He's not going to carry you on any of this, but still fun. Fun character to have around for mm-hmm. that. So yeah, that's been fun so far with Avowed. So yeah, that's Avowed. It's on Game Pass, Xbox, and PC, so people can check it out there.
Mm-hmm.
The other game I've been playing is a game about digging a hole. I finished up my first run in that, and that has been fun so far. The ending sequence is not quite what I was expecting it to be, as it kind of ended up taking a few tries to figure out the way to get past that to the end, and that kind of opens up a essentially like a new game plus run,
mm-hmm.
where essentially you restart the game and then have the like a trophy shelf full of stuff that tells you various goals you need to beat, some of which you can do in the first run if you are doing a bunch of stuff, which I had a few for digging up a bunch of dirt and selling a lot of the stones and such for money, and that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's been fun. We'll definitely be playing some more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played the two PlayStation Plus Premium Classics that are on PS Plus now, Patapon 3,
mm-hmm.
Which takes the core gameplay of the first two games, and you kind of have a hero character, essentially, that you are leading your crew with, mm-hmm. versus, I think, the first two, you just have a crew of Patapon that are doing your bidding, and you're kind of trying to craft or find gear for them to outfit them. And so far it's been mainly just my guy plus mm-hmm. three others, and you're kind of completing missions to level them up and spend some skill points and get them better gear as you go along, and potentially change classes or whatever, because you're getting, you know, there's a bunch of different weapons available, but I don't have the people for that. So still early in that, but that's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a great game to play in my setup, playing it over my capture card through, you know, a setup that definitely adds a little bit of lag to it,
mm-hmm.
Versus playing it on the TV itself. So I'll be probably trying to focus on playing it that way versus what I was doing before. And there's Dropship. I think it's Dropship United Peace Force. This is like a flight game.
Mm-hmm.
Has a bit more simulation elements to it, even though it's set in the future. Like I said, like 2050 or something like that. But the main plane you're kind of controlling early on is kind of a VTOL of sorts. Controls pretty interestingly, where you're using all four shoulder and trigger buttons for going up and down and turning around, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're like R1, L1 to go up, R2, L2 to go down. And you can go out of hover mode and into a flight mode that, you know, controls a bit more like what you might want out of a flight combat game.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. I played a bunch of the tutorial stuff and a couple of campaign missions, which are all kind of early stuff where you're basically loading up like APCs onto your ship and delivering them to another place nearby,
mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And the second one that required me to, you're essentially suspicious of this, of whatever's going on in this region, that there might be some weapons being transported, and you're kind of going around and getting these vehicles, seeing what's going on, and eventually you do find vehicles with more serious stuff on them that mm-hmm. kind of justifies what you've been doing. So, in a very this came out like 3 or 4 months after 9/11. So
yeah,
I was going to say it seemed very much like War on Terror, but it kind of was ahead of that. So I imagine it was probably more based on some of the fervor around the Gulf War kind of thing, but seems pretty decent for what it is. But yeah, it's definitely kind of a no frills kind of game to it. But still pretty solid. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I've still been playing and am going through Trails Through Daybreak 2. I've gotten pretty good ways through it. At least what appears to be. I could be wrong because this game does appear to be fairly on the long side. But anyway, again, you know, you're kind of dividing your time between, you know, the stuff that's in the real world and the stuff you're doing in the Martian Gartan. And I will say the one thing about the Martian Gartan stuff that I like is that you can actually go through it fairly quickly. Since most of the tasks that you have to perform are typically just, you know, go and kill this many type of enemies. And then, you know, eventually you get to a boss. Stuff like that. And, you know, when you do it, you get, like, points to use for, like, this sort of gotcha mechanic they got where you can, you know, get stuff like new equipment, costumes, background music that you can listen to. Stuff like that. But, yeah, like, plot-wise, I'm currently at the part where Agnes is in control and we're sort of exploring her school, which is with, you know, S and Nadia, and it kind of reminds me of Cold Steel, but it's not as, you know, it's not quite as elaborate as Cold Steel's school stuff was. Still pretty entertaining, though, for what it is. And overall, I'm still very much loving it and, you know, getting to explore the Republic more. But other than that, I have been playing Deltanod's most recent game, which is Lost Records Bloom and Rage. More or less a spiritual successor to Life is Strange. And right down to the fact that, you know, the character that you're playing, Swan, is basically just Max. Like, straight up. She is, like, basically like Max, except whereas Max was really into photography, Swan is really into movies. And you spend, like, a lot of the game sort of filming stuff with her camcorder to fill out what she calls her memoir, because as you're playing the game, her family is getting ready to move, and she's trying to, like, film all the stuff of her old house in her old hometown before she has to leave. But essentially, the game is sort of divided into, like, these two different sections. There's a first-person mode, which takes place more contemporary. I think it's around, like, 2022, where, again, you're playing as Swan, but it's first person, and she's, you know, in her late 30s, early 40s at this point. And essentially, she gets word from one of her old friends, Autumn, that somebody delivered this package to Autumn's front door that says for Bloom and Rage. And she immediately gets in contact with Swan, and they decide to meet at this little bar in their old hometown of Velvet Cove, and I think is Massachusetts. And more or less, it's got a very kind of like Stand By Me.
They're in Michigan. No big deal, but they're in Michigan. Yeah,
Michigan, not Massachusetts, right. I, of course, got them mixed up. But yeah, actually, that makes more sense because I'm pretty sure you get a lot of, because she ends up going across the lake into Canada. So yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, and essentially it's got very Stand By Me vibe. She's got a new friends that she's hanging out with the summer. And the game sort of like is constantly reminding you, hey, this totally takes place in 1995, because there's the VHS tapes, the VCRs, the camcorder that you're using, the movie castle, which is basically just, you know, their version of Blockbuster, like right down to like having the very same color scheme and everything. And Essentially, a lot of the game, at least starting out, is not very plot specific. It's very sort of slice of life type stuff. Like, oh, she's filming stuff around the movie palace or whatever, and she ticks off this chick named Dylan, who's super paranoid and gets tipped off. He's like, are you filming me? You know, you're some kind of pervert or whatever. And then her boyfriend Corey comes in on his dirt bike, which is, you know, strike one. And I'm looking between the two and I'm like, is it just me or does Dylan look a lot younger than Corey? And I'm looking at these, I'm like, okay, I know this is the mid-90s and everything, but whatever, you know. And then you end up meeting up with some of the others. Of course, there's Autumn, who is the, she's like the girl that runs the local ice cream stand that I think is next to the movie place. There's her friend Nora, who is the sort of stereotypical punk rock chick. And then there's Kat, who is Dylan's sister, who is like the spunky little powerhouse, who is like really tiny but has a huge chip on her shoulder. I've been told there's apparently a good reason for that, and the game is kind of hinting at the reason why, if you can look through, if you can kind of read between the lines. But anyway, so there's that, and then Corey like takes the keys to the ice cream stand and like throws them over the fence into like this, I think it's like this abandoned playground. And so like during the night, you and the other girls are looking through it, trying to find the keys. And then there's this other stuff. And then like the horror stuff suddenly just hits you like, boom, there it is out of nowhere. But yeah, I mean, so far I have been enjoying that game a lot. Obviously being that it's a don't nod game, it does come out kind of scuffed every so often. Once again, the lip syncing isn't really all there. There's some graphic clipping and, the environments in general are pretty good, but there are like occasionally areas where some of the textures are a little rougher than others. So far I've been very much enjoying it. That's what I've been playing. So Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I also played Lost Records Bloomin' Rage. I was the one that reviewed Tape 1.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you know, at the end of the day, like, yeah, I feel like it was worth my time. That being said, a lot of it, I feel like, was a waste of my time. The main thing here, as opposed to, like, just about every episodic game you'll play, whether it's from Don't Nod, Telltale, whoever it may be, the main thing here is that there's only two of them. So you're essentially playing like the first half of the game. And as with the case with a lot of, you know, Telltale and Don't Nod games is the first chapter is a whole lot of exposition.
Yeah.
And you hope to the God of Gods that they hit the landing, because, you know, when it doesn't, it's just rough in that regard. And the main thing working against it here, and I hate to use it as an example, it's the fact that the second tape was delayed a month. So it's not going to be until 2 months before we get the next game. And because, in my opinion, it took so long for the stakes to actually matter or mean anything, like, that'll turn off a lot of people. The main thing with this first tape is that it'll take you anywhere between 6 to 8 hours to finish, which is actually really, really long for a Don't Nod chapter. If you were to play Life is Strange, for example, like, those 5-chapter games, each chapter would be, like, 2 hours long. So, you know, they feel like a short movie, whereas this is long and drawn out. And part of the reason we have that is because with Lost Records, as opposed to something like Life is Strange, with Lost Records you have Swan and you have 3 friends to cater to, whereas with Life is Strange, you know, Max just had Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it from there, and then you deal with the side characters however you may want. And the main thing that this game is about, as with a lot of them are, is the connections that Swan makes with the characters that Brandon mentioned. And for me, I don't know about you, I didn't really care about any of the characters here. I thought, like, Autumn is, you know, she's nice and sweet. I thought, what's the the sister's name, the one that we just talked about last.
Kat.
Yeah, Kat. I just found her weird, in all honesty. And then you get to...
Nora.
Nora, the punk rock girl. I thought she was like the coolest character there, but she's also like Chloe from Life is Strange. Like, I haven't really seen any real differences with their characters. But yeah, so the main thing that Brandon didn't go over was... he went over, but like not into as much detail is the camera. The camera is pretty basically all of the gameplay here, and it consists of everything from like recording key moments to actually being the thing that, you know, makes it more like a video game. Because whenever you're in a specific area, you have a set number of things to film, and it'll tell you how much you have there. So when you do go back, let's say you want to clean it up and get all the trophies, you'll have an idea of what you missed, and you can easily go back to it. And it's pretty cool in that regard. Like, when you play as Swan from 1995, obviously, like, you know, it's an anachronism of the times, but once you take the camera out, you're seeing everything in, like, their version of HD, which was hi-fi, which honestly doesn't look, you know, obviously doesn't look as good as it is today. And then all of a sudden you take it off and like everything looks normal again. When you play as you know, teenage Swan, she's it's all in third person, and then when you play as current day Swan, it becomes first person. So it's cool seeing that kind of difference there and going in and out. But the main thing that made it sort of a drag to me was I didn't feel like the moments in which you'd be jumping times would be, I didn't feel like they were that obvious. Like, for example, when I'm in the forest trying to, like, you know, find everything to record, if I were to, like, interact with a certain object, all of a sudden it would take me back to the current time, and I can't go back to it unless I were to turn the game off. And I thought that was, a little hard to deal with because it just took me out of the story a little too much. But yeah, that being said, Brandon, did you actually finish this first chapter or not yet?
I have not finished it just yet.
Okay. Yeah. Like, you eventually get to this point where it becomes supernatural, and that's another thing that kind of makes this game different. Like, aside from the camera, the main character doesn't have any powers. You know, in Life is Strange, Max had telekinesis. In the last Life is Strange game, which was developed by Dontnod, or not the last one, but in True Colors, she had the power of empathy, which isn't really a power, but yeah, like there were these certain gimmicks that really, you know, gave you that game feel. And the other thing that I'm not liking are the decisions. I feel like none of the decisions you make really affect the story. Like they all just feel rather tacked on. And again, like that's because they want to focus on the relationships. And because we were focusing on the relationships, and because I mentioned that I didn't really care about each character, the main thing that I wanted to do was juggle my relationship between the three. And the one thing that, you know, Dontnod loves to do after you finish is they tell you your progress or your friendship levels with each of these people. And all of mine were like at barely friend or below. And it's because I didn't really focus on any one of them because I didn't feel like any one was more important than the other. But yeah, it is cool, like, seeing how these characters evolve and whatnot. I don't think this character is as interesting as Max, and like that kind of just comes with the package because you kind of just expect it. All of the answers she gives her friends are things that you may not even want. Like, you don't really shape Swan into a character that you want her to be because the story pretty much just describes her as, like, you know, this awkward nerd who loves to watch the movies and whatnot, and obviously with her case with the bullies, you know, they're going to make fun of her being heavyset and all of that stuff. And that's obviously not stuff that, those weren't traits that, you know, Max shared. So it's going to be a little bit different in that regard. And like, you know, as someone that grew up heavyset myself, that's where I really found myself relating with the character. But aside from that, like, it also has this very elementary feel of, cool, I just met like these two girls and all of a sudden 2 days later, like, I can't spend any time of my life without them. And like, I felt that regard, but like at the same time, just because I didn't really care for the characters, it was rough. That being said, the end hits really hard. So I don't want to say excited. I'm definitely looking forward to what's coming, but you know, given that the year has already been the way it's been, I don't know if I'll be able to make time for it. But the good thing here is that if you're playing the game on PlayStation and you have PS Plus Extra, this game is available day one to download with the service. So that could help. Otherwise, if you're someone who's dying for more Don't Nod content, I'd go ahead and recommend it there. But if you can wait, I would definitely recommend just waiting until April, until the second chapter comes out, and just playing it as a whole there, just because it's really hard to fathom spending $40 for half a game and hoping the second half is going to be just as good, if not better. But yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say there. The other game that I've been playing is coming out at the end of the week. It's Monster Hunter Wilds. And yeah, it's fantastic. If you've played Monster Hunter World or Monster Hunter Rise, it's more of the same. You know, you have an even bigger open world in Monster Hunter than we've had before. Every area is still separated by various biomes. But at the same time, when you traverse from area to area, it's pretty seamless. There are no load screens in that regard, at least not ones that you can feel. And it definitely does feel like an experience that feels like the next generation of Monster Hunter. That being said, I also believe it's a little bit more approachable than it has been in the past, which is a good thing just because of how archaic understanding Monster Hunter can be. The story here is pretty solid. It was good enough for me to, you know, keep going and eventually roll credits. And it's pretty short as well. You know, I think I took around maybe 13 hours to roll credits. And then from there, there's more. Obviously, like Monster Hunter, if, you know, for all intents and purposes, today is a live service game where you can just enjoy finding loot with friends and whatever it may be. And I had the fortune of playing with other people in games media. So that was pretty cool. As for the things that are new, aside from, like, obviously the more open world, now you have these new mounts called Sacrets, which are pretty much like chocobos. And the cool thing about them is they also include their own pouches, which also includes room for another weapon. You know, a big thing in Monster Hunter is, like, choosing what weapon you want to use, whether it be a great sword, dual blades, a gun, whatever it may be. Now that you have two weapons, it really changes a lot. Like, for example, I am someone who, from Monster Hunter World, I was used to using the hammer. You know, I got a lot of pleasure out of just hitting monsters in the face with a hammer and then just seeing them limp all their way to me causing them oblivion. Whereas now, I feel like I can attack both in close quarters with the dual blades and also back away by, you know, using the gun and make sure I feel more powerful in that regard. That being said, because of I had this freedom, I felt like it was a little easier. And, you know, I'm saying that with a grain of salt. Like, Monster Hunter, for all intents and purposes, for me, has always been a hard game. I am somebody who always calls for help and gets excited whenever somebody Japanese comes in, because that pretty much guaranteed me of winning that mission. But yeah, like, just having two weapons is pretty cool. Another thing is that they have this focus system where when you do enough damage to monsters, all of a sudden you'll see weak points and you can just hold L2 and then press the R button to go ahead and attack that weakness. And for every different weapon you have, it'll have a different kind of effect. So I'm someone that used the dual blades, right? So when I use the focus attacks, I would attack their wound and all of a sudden, like, my hunter would just jump straight out, fly into the monster and just go ahead and inflict damage from tail to head, as if he were Levi from Attack on Titan. It's a really awesome and, like, a pleasurable experience that I really enjoyed there. What else here? Again, the story was pretty solid. I want to see what else I had in my notes to make sure that I don't miss a beat here. I talked about the focus mode. There is also this clutch claw system where if you're running away or just traversing in general, you can pull on things like branches to have them fall on the monsters, and that really opens it up as well. And just the quality of life improvements in general. That being said, like, there is still some, you know, archaic complications with the way Monster Hunter works. Like, I am still not a fan of their menu system. Like, holding L1 and then using square and circle to cycle through the various items you have is still a little bit hard to do. But you can also use your mount to make things easier. Like, for example, I talked about having different weapons. So the way you actually set this up is you press the right button on the D-pad, and this allows you to jump on your mount and all of a sudden change your weapon. So then after that, you can go ahead and jump out from there. So that's pretty cool. Since they have their own pouch, you can go ahead and move items from your pouch to your mount's pouch and go from there. And yeah, like it definitely really makes things easier in that regard. Since the worlds are also more open, you can pretty much make camp at different designated areas, although you do have to beware, because sometimes monsters can go ahead and attack that camp and just make it worse in that regard. But I never really found that to be a problem, because as I got through the campaign, I had enough money and resources for the ability to make camp anywhere. But yeah, now that I've rolled credits in the game, you also have the ability to unlock high rank, and that pretty much brings in more monsters, which brings in time for more opportunities for loot, which brings in, you know, more weapons and all that stuff. Like the action doesn't end in Monster Hunter once you roll credits, and that makes it really fun. But at the same time, this is also the first time that I actually rolled credits in the game, just because of how cool the community is and just how much more approachable the game was in general. But yeah, that's been about it there. I totally recommend the game, and you can find my review on Smashpad by the time you read this, or by the time you listen to this. Aside from that, I've also downloaded this demo on Steam called Ruffy in the Riverside. This is they're really promoting this for Steam Next Fest. And this game is a 3D platformer with like Paper Mario graphics, and it's really hard to really compare it to another game. Like, it's easy to compare it to Mario 64 or games like that, because at the end of the day, it's a fetch quest and you're looking for stars. But the puzzles and stuff that you just come across are pretty cool to see. And the demo I played allows you to get like a certain number of stars, and people say it takes like 30 minutes to an hour. But I stopped like after 45 minutes, just because like I don't want to end up doing these things again, because I'm already sold on the gameplay. I don't know when the game comes out, but it's definitely something to look out for. I did play it on Steam Deck, but it's also going to come to PlayStation, Xbox, and I believe Switch. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to there. And that's about it.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. We got Game Pass. They announced the lineup for the rest of the month here. And I don't know why they even made this this announcement here, because there's not much on here.
Yeah.
First up here, that's already out, is F1 24 that is on EA Play. If you have Game Pass Ultimate or PC Game Pass, or just EA Play subscription on your own, that is available now for the latest of the EA F1 games. Also available now. Let's see, Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That is sort of an isometric RPG. So yeah, that's one you can check out. And the only one here that is not out yet, but will be on the 25th, so Tuesday, will be on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, Watch Dogs Legion. So that game people can check out if you have not seen it before. The latest of the Watch Dogs games. Set in London, so
mm-hmm.
You can check that out, and that's it. Not much else here.
Nope.
I just want to see how the next month's games look. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's your list for this week. So,
mm-hmm.
There you go.
All right.
But yeah, speaking of things happening this week. We do have that ID at Xbox showcase, and there's also one more showcase happening this week. The Pokemon Presents will be happening on the 27th
mm-hmm.
at, let's see, 6 a.m. Pacific time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. So mm-hmm. we'll have things getting announced there. Probably see, I think you would see at this point, at least another trailer for the next Pokemon game,
mm-hmm.
the Z8 one. We'll have to see how that goes, and maybe something else, maybe another remake for this year if ZA is not out anytime soon. We'll have to see, but yeah, and I'm sure people are going to work themselves up into a fury if none of the Game Boy games come to the Nintendo Switch Online app. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should definitely be interesting to see. I mean, I doubt they'll show anything Switch 2, but I think that if they show things like Pokemon Legends ZA, like their dates will be really telling.
Yeah. It is supposed to be out this year at some point, but we don't really know much else about it. We just got that teaser trailer like 2 years ago, and that's been it. Mm-hmm. For that. So there you go. Some Pokemon stuff to look forward to. And speaking of upcoming announcements, we have a potential new Tony Hawk game coming out in the near mm-hmm. future. They have a countdown on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater websites for mm-hmm. March 4th, which I think the safe assumption is will be a remaster of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 as a follow-up to 1 and 2 before they put the developer onto Diablo 2, that remaster that they did. So I wanted to see, but that's going to be, yeah, the Tuesday after next. So that'll be a bit before that, but I guess it showed up a bit of a teaser for it in whatever the new Call of Duty map was, and the website itself got a countdown, so now we know something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should definitely be quite pleasing if we do get a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game, especially if it's a remake of 3 and 4, which are both great. I do wonder. I do wonder who the developer is, because they closed Toys for Bob, and I think that's the dev, right? And they're all working on Call of Duty and Overwatch and stuff. So it's good to see that this is definitely continuing, and this has to be it, because a lot of the pro skaters have already leaked that they're in the game. So
yeah, it was Blizzard Albany. That was, what was their previous name? Not Raven.
Neversoft?
No. Let me see here. Vicarious Visions.
Yeah, Vicarious Visions.
So yeah, that's the studio that was working on that. Maybe they're essentially letting the Blizzard Albany work on this, but we don't know at this point. So yeah, that is something to look forward to next week.
Yeah.
We'll get to some dates that are happening in the near future.
Yep.
We got first up here, Metal Bringer, coming to PS5 and PC on March 12th.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Steam demo that is out now, so I'll probably check that out. It's a roguelite action game. Mm-hmm. Follow-up to, I forget what the previous game was, the Bringer series is what they reference. But yeah, it has a nice look to it if you like your sort of mech action games kind of stuff here, from what it looks like. And it looks like this version has, you know, your kind of pixel graphics and such, but also ray traced lighting in it that looks real nice. So yeah, this looks neat. So yeah, that's one that'll be out in a couple of weeks. Next up here, not a game, but we found out some more information on the Nintendo Switch. The way they're handling things, evolving the Nintendo Switch Online leading up to the Switch 2's launch, and that is particularly that they are getting rid of the gold points, which if you had a My Nintendo account, you could earn gold points for purchases and be able to use those points for a discount off of games, or if you had enough for went for games that were cheaper, you could redeem them for the games themselves for that. So they had a big post on the My Nintendo website that essentially gave a bunch of information on how the thing was going to be shutting down. It'll shut down on March 24th, and if you have you make purchases before then, I think it says here 9:30 p.m. Pacific time on March 24th, you will get gold points. After that, they will be no longer awarded, and you have until I think March 24th, 2026 to redeem them. Physical games that were made before, released before, released on or before March 24th are still eligible to earn gold points, even if it's purchased after. So you have to keep an eye out on that if you're still looking for gold points. So yeah, that's looking to be the gist of it here. Platinum points are still sticking around. Those are the ones you would get for doing things on the Nintendo Switch or on the Nintendo website, kind of thing. Usually using them for avatars or other little bonuses or reward items on My Nintendo, that kind of stuff. I think the other thing is that the vouchers that they've had will not be working for Switch 2 games. So Nintendo seems to be basically being, we're getting all of your money for Switch 2 games, or you don't buy them. Either way, we're getting all the money possible out of this and not letting anybody get discounts in any way.
Yeah, it's definitely a bummer of an announcement. I don't know about you guys, but I've always been a big My Nintendo supporter. You know, I still have a lot of my gold points redemptions, still screen wrapped and all that stuff. Because you know, I really enjoy the service and, you know, just getting back from making Nintendo purchases. Like, we talk a lot about Xbox Game Pass being the best value in gaming. And I think, like, the next best value would just be buying a game on your Switch, just because, like, you know, if you bought a $60 game, you're always going to get $3 back in that regard. And then, like, for us, for example, if you were to get a redeem code, or for us, a review code, that actually counted for gold points. So I was like, okay, cool, I can go ahead and save up enough for whatever indie game I want to buy. So yeah, what I'm going to do before the deadline is I'm going to pull up all the gold points I can and see if I can pick up an indie game that I don't have, because, you know, as far as like downloadable content that like we don't review, the only stuff that I actually download are games that aren't available physically, just because I just prefer that method of getting them. And yeah, so I don't know what's available, but that's definitely something I'm gonna do. But, you know, just to look at why Nintendo is doing this, obviously, like, no one's gonna know why, but, you know, the main reason is, okay, Nintendo doesn't want us to get discounts from buying their stuff anymore. It's the most obvious thing. No one else has this service, so why should they do it? And it makes sense. It sucks, but it makes sense. But at the same time, we don't know what's coming with the Switch 2, so there's still reason to hold out hope, but I wouldn't be that positive for it.
That's kind of your latest Nintendo Switch and Switch 2 update, which is fuck you, give us money. So there you go. So yeah, let's get to our next bit of news here. If you're looking forward to Tales of the Shire, the Lord of the Rings game coming out on March 25th, sorry, you are going to have to wait a while longer.
Yep.
It's been delayed to July 29th, another 4 months. For that, as they say here, a good Hobbit feast takes time, and so does Tales of the Shire, taking a little longer to ensure that every Hobbit on every platform can enjoy the same cozy experience, which I'm going to guess means Switch version's looking rough, because that was the game whenever we've seen footage of it, looked the worst of all of them, and that probably is the one they want to make sure is ready to go. But yeah, there you go. That'll be a middle of the summer game now.
Yeah. I wonder how rough it is, because that I think that was the version I played at Summer Game Fest, and I enjoyed what I played, so it's kind of shocking that it hasn't come out yet, because that was initially planned for a December release, and now we're seeing it more than half a year later. This is not a big studio, and, you know, you're paying these people another 6 months. You hope they succeed, because you know what happens when a game doesn't succeed.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. That'll be a little bit longer. But yeah, let's see. For games coming out later this year, we have an announcement that Mouthwashing is coming to the PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and a Switch later this year, as they were also celebrating with this announcement that the game has sold 500,000 copies on PC. So that has been one of the horror darlings of the last year. And now more people will get to check it out sometime later this year. I believe they're going to have physical versions for PS5 and Switch at some point through Fangamer. So, yeah, that'll be good for more people to check it out.
That's fun news. I've never played Mouthwashing. And yeah, now that it's going to more consoles, I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. We had this.
I've played Mouthwashing myself. It's a really good game, but it is also a deeply unsettling one. So, just, you know, FYI.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. And we have one more announcement here that is a game coming out next year. Bit of a weird source, but it is Samurai Pizza Cats, A Blast from the Past, coming to all major platforms. So PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, most likely. Based on the Tatsunoko anime from the 90s, that got a localization here, but not a faithful one. From what I've read, it seemed like one of those animes that got localized, but they didn't get the rights to, I guess, to adapt the script, as said. So they kind of just did their own writing for it. It made it a bit of a weird anime series for the West. So they're doing a new game here that is developed by Studio Blast Zero, that recently made Jitsu Squad. So that's interesting. It's like a 2D action RPG. The neat thing I saw is that the animation is not being done digitally. They're doing essentially hand-drawn animation here and sort of scanning that into the game itself, which gives it a really nice kind of look. Sort of like a high-res, you know, 90s anime look to it. And not many games have at this point. So, yeah, it looks really nice from what they're showing here. So, yeah, that looks neat. That'll be out next year.
Yeah, I totally forgot this thing existed. Samurai Pizza Cats used to come on like at 7 a.m., which was when I usually woke up for school, and it was one of the reasons why I'd show up late. And I talked to my friends about it, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. So it's good to know that it's real, because I was starting to think that it would be a Mandela effect thing. But yeah, this game actually looks pretty fun. So I do want to try it out.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be out next year at some point, hopefully. But yeah, speaking of sales numbers, we had some more announcements of sales numbers. Pacific Drive reached 1 million copies sold, as publisher Kepler Interactive and developer Ironwood Studios announced, which is great. That is a very fun game that people should definitely check out. It's on PS5 and PC. And made by a pretty small team. It says here a team of less than 20 people, which is a good accomplishment there to see such an interesting and unique game kind of do well like this. So yeah, they got three big free content updates, and they're working on a fourth one that'll be out in the near future. So that's cool. And the next one here, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, has reached 2 million copies sold in about 2 weeks since launch. Mm-hmm. So good for those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I believe this was, I forget where this was made, what country, but it was made on a fairly cheap budget as a result. Because it was.
Yeah. But much like the first game, it's still kind of janky right now. But yeah, good for them.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, it's good to hear that. I forget, is PlayOn still part of the Embracer Group?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's good to see that they finally have something that you can consider a success. I've never played any of the Kingdom Come games. I have been recommended them more than enough times, and it's good to hear that the second one's doing really well. So yeah, we all know they need a win. So
yeah.
Yeah,
I will say the one issue with the original Kingdom Come game is that it has a very, as far as like its combat system goes, it actually does have a fairly high difficulty curve. simply because, you know, you want, you're like absolutely driven to play it like Skyrim or something, but you cannot play it like Skyrim. It just doesn't work that way. Because it's all about, you know, not just like dodging, but also parrying and being able to sort of get an idea of which way your butt effectively, you know, knock their weapon away so that you can actually attack them successfully. And there comes a point like midway through the game where you'll get to what is, for all intents and purposes, a boss battle. And if you have not been able to successfully, navigate that combat system, you just will not be able to proceed through the rest of the game, period. Because he will straight up just slaughter you within seconds. I will say I have not been able to play Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 a lot. The combat is somewhat more streamlined in Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. And there is also the introduction of because this takes place basically during the Hussite Wars, and one of the major innovations of the Hussite Wars is it was one of the first major European wars where black powder weapons ended up becoming a major part of battle. So you'll get access to like early medieval handguns. So it gets this sort of new aspect overall to the gameplay. But again, you still cannot play this game like you're playing your regular first-person action RPG.
Gotcha. I think it would kind of help that I don't really play those types of games to begin with, and that might, you know, be something to my favor, but yeah. We'll see if I can even have time, so.
Oh, yeah. Also, the other thing to remember about those games, it basically tells you, being a medieval peasant kind of sucked. Like, not only were your days monotonous, but you didn't really have a whole lot to do during your downtime, and a lot of the early game involves you just sort of farting around in your peasant village until, you know, it finally gets attacked by raiders, and then the game for real starts.
So yeah, let's get to some more news as we get into the industry news part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We got Microsoft probably making the biggest news of the week as they announced their big new AI that's called Muse. Mm-hmm. It was a very messy announcement here. As they were trying to describe the way this works, they call it a world in human action model, WAM, which they nicknamed Muse, that they describe as a generative AI model of a video game that can generate game visuals, controller actions, or both. And yeah, it's not really anywhere close to actually building video games. From the way that they show this off, and it's just a weird project to announce at this point, because it seems mostly for shareholders' sake of like, oh, we're working on AI stuff here. Their research game intelligence team worked with Ninja Theory on this, as they used data from Bleeding Edge, their 4v4 multiplayer game that did not do well, but used that to train this thing. And yeah, it's so far can create visuals at a resolution of 300 by 180 pixels, which is not very high resolution, not anywhere close to 1080p.
Mm-hmm.
On that. Let's see. It's trained on more than 1 billion images and controller actions, corresponding to over 7 years of continuous human gameplay. So yeah, it's a weird thing. So they had two people from the team and then Phil Spencer on this video talking about this, and Phil Spencer kind of just weirdly throws in that he thinks it would be great for preservation's sake. To be able to bring back old games, and somehow this would help with that in a way that just did not make much sense out of this. yeah, it's just weird. Yeah, when they show this off, one demo, Muse was prompted with a modified visual featuring a completely new character, then generated a gameplay sequence that showed how that character might be adapted into the experience. Seems like more of a prototyping tool of a sort, but I don't know that it's really going to be all that useful at the moment,
mm-hmm.
considering the amount of work you need to do on top of what this has to it. Mm-hmm. Which is just a weird whole announcement here. Mm-hmm. I say here, you can imagine a world where from gameplay data and video, a model can learn old games and really make them portable to any platform where these models can run. These models and their ability to learn how a game plays without the necessity of the original engine running on the original hardware, I think opens up a ton of opportunity. That's Phil Spencer kind of talking about how it could help bolster game preservation. And it's like, that doesn't really make much sense there. Because it's like, I don't know, there's plenty of games, you know, imagine this thing trying to learn from WarioWare, where it's literally a game made of chunks of various games mm-hmm. that it just throws into it, not having any consistency. The way you would from like a multiplayer game, where it's like, this is going to probably behave and work similarly at most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this one just like, yeah, I don't know that this is anything they're going to be able to use, but Satya Nadella spoke later this week and was like, yeah, we're going to have a catalog of games using this in the near future. And it's like, this just all sounds like stockholder nonsense to be talking about mm-hmm. versus a thing that can have any sort of use in the near future. Mm-hmm. That's not a very, you know, very limited situations.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of the big Microsoft AI thing that just made them look like idiots to the general audience. Mm-hmm. Because what they're showing here is not all that impressive in terms of why it's useful right now.
Yeah. Plus, it looked terrible, you know. So not much to say there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, we'll have to see if that develops at all. But the like GIFs and such they've shown of this just does not look particularly great, and it has like mm-hmm. all the hallmarks of the way you would expect that stuff to look, where their animations and such not working correctly, and just environment stuff kind of just warping around all the time, how it looks and all that. And it actually got me to think if there's a way to properly use this, make a game that looks like this kind of nonsense, but without any AI usage to it, I would be into it. If an indie studio could somehow make a game that actually works in the nonsensical way that AI video generation tends to, especially for the way this thing looks, that would be a very kind of fun look to it. But yeah, the sort of persistence of visual style that this thing looks like just is very easy to see. It's like, it's nonsense to be like, this is going to be the next big thing anytime soon. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, there you go. There's your big negative Microsoft news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll go to just your first big layoff news of the week. I believe Marvel Rivals, they announced that they had reached 40 million players already in the first few months of the game's launch. And in celebration, they laid off the small team that, at least most of the small team that was working on the game from the West.
Mm-hmm.
That includes the game director and others in sort of the R&D team and such that were working from, I believe, mostly the U.S., here that were laid off. And yeah, that kicked off a lot of people being very angry about this, because it's like, well, we've had, you know, people get laid off for making bad games that don't do well. People get laid off for making games that just don't, that are, you know, fine. and just don't find a reasonable audience to keep them going. And now we've got the game that is one of the most highly played games on Steam and consoles, and even that's not enough to keep everybody working. But part of that is because this is published by NetEase, who is, as we've talked about in the past couple of months, essentially pulling funding and support for many of their Western studios and games that they were funding in the past, but sort of have taken to trying to stick to developers in the at least Southeast Asia, whether in China or Korea, but they're even looking to potentially pull support for Japanese games, including like the Yakuza director Nagoshi's game that they made a big deal about signing for his own new game a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That might be on the way out for at least under NetEase. So. Yeah, this is a shitty situation, but not hugely surprising considering who is in charge of this game. But they helped get this game launched and in essentially a good place, and now they don't need the people that helped do that.
Mm-hmm.
At least some of them. So yeah, there you go. I don't know if you got anything to add, Brandon.
Nope.
just more bummer. Bummer news.
Yeah, just more bummer.
But yeah, for more bummer news, Netflix has announced layoffs at Night School Studio, makers of Oxenfree, that they released Oxenfree 2 back in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
But probably are still working on whatever's next. But much like Netflix's other in-house projects, this studio has also seen layoffs. We don't know how many of them there are that have been laid off, how many remain, whatever, but they still seem to, at least the studio still seems to exist, but we don't really know much else here. So maybe they'll keep working on a game, and maybe when that gets further along, we'll hire more people, but they seem to at least be slimming down for the time being, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like, these here are pretty much just two examples of like the very different and bizarre ways we see layoffs in the first place. You know, both Marvel and Netflix, you know, ended up seeing like, you know, not necessarily final products, but obviously products that were shipped and saw different levels of success. And Night School has developed a lot of stuff, but like the main thing here is that Netflix is its own platform. I don't know if they've ever like announced like any real like successful numbers as to what the Netflix games portion of the streaming service is really helping or coming out towards to, but they've also been aggressively hiring. So obviously like people are going there for a reason, and it's tough to see layoffs in that regard. And then, you know, going back to Marvel Rivals and what's happening with NetEase, my main thing here is that, you know, yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, Marvel Rivals has seen all sorts of success. You know, I'm a huge fan of the game. And then all of a sudden, like, they shut down the studio in Seattle. I don't know how big they are, but, like, at the end of the day, you want to look at, like, the sheer numbers as far as salary goes. And you got to consider the fact that NetEase is a Chinese company. And a fair wage in Seattle, one-on-one with a Chinese wage, makes you super upper class. And yeah, they're not going to pay for that. So it's unfortunate in that regard. And, you know, I hope they land on their feet, but it's tough to say it's surprising just based on what we've seen. And, you know, obviously we have our political shortfalls with what's happening with Trump and the tariffs and whatever it may be. And, you know, we're seeing all sorts of what used to be allied powers, you know, end up stomping their feet in different ways. And it's just a mess. And you hate to see it.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We also have this weird story. So there's a former Bungie director who was the director on Marathon, Christopher Barrett, who got fired late last year, or last year, and then He has sued the studio late last year, claiming he was fired for no reason. Saying there was an investigation into supposed misconduct and that it was a sham investigation. But during the course of this, going through the courts, Sony has responded and published a number of text messages in the big document they put out. And they basically seem to show that this guy was very much a creepy guy that would warrant potentially losing his job. As a result, he claims it was part of a whole ploy to deny him more than $40 million in stock buybacks and whatnot if he left the company due to the acquisition and all that. And they very much seem to be like, no, this is the sort of actions we found that warranted discipline in this way. Yeah, there's like one message here where he asks a female Bungie employee, are you still in PJs? Is it like a button down top and bottoms, a sweatpants, Lululemons? Just creepy there. Another one where he's texting woman, calling her the Holy Grail, saying, here, I'm not hitting on you. Nope, it doesn't feel like that. I'm married, but I can be honest. You are the 0.000001. And better be treated like that forever. She replied that her boyfriend treats her very well. And he replied, he better because I would hit on you if he wasn't. Reminded, he just said, I'm married, so I'm not hitting on you. But also like, well, if he wasn't, then I would hit on you. A different woman working at Bungie claimed that he called her while drunk. Late at night, spent hours with her on FaceTime despite her asking him to respect her boundaries. At one point, he allegedly took his phone into his bedroom and said, I can't believe I'm lying in bed talking to, victim one. And she abruptly hung up. And so, yeah, his lawyer has responded to this, saying Sony continues to disingenuously cherry pick text messages and alleged conversations and make unsupported and conclusory statements to defame Christopher and justify terminating him. To avoid paying him what he was owed under his employment agreements. He is telling that Sony does not include the full text messages as exhibits or the full content of these conversations. Nothing in Sony's response provides a legitimate legal or factual basis to terminate Christopher for cause. And it's like, boy. I don't know. I feel like that kind of stuff, especially if they have enough of it, would definitely feel like, yeah, you're kind of harassing people here. Especially many of the women that work at Bungie. And that would be very much grounds for termination, I would think, in many places. But he claims there's context that those text messages are lacking. He's like, I don't know what context you need to be talking to women about what kind of PJs they're wearing. Or telling a woman that she's so incredible that she deserves the best boyfriend or whatever, or else he would hit on her. That kind of shit. So yeah, or text or FaceTiming people while you're drunk and saying you're lying in bed talking to them.
Yeah, we're all okay with creepy assholes not having jobs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's pretty much what I have to say there. I will. I mean, just to further add. It is interesting that Sony wants to bring it this far. You know, we can go ahead and like crap on Sony all we want for them being number one, but this is pretty awesome.
Yeah. This kind of stuff you do when you're trying to prove that you're not firing, people for random reasons, for no reason, to get out of paying them $40 million. But yeah, that guy just seems like a piece of crap. So good riddance to him. So there you go. We'll end up here on some bummers as we have some deaths in the industry. Victor Antonov, who is probably well known for being the art director for Half-Life 2, has passed away at the age of 52, very young. Unfortunately, he worked on Half-Life 2 as the art director, and I believe also went to Arkane to work on the Dishonored games.
Yeah, and he also did some work on their version of Prey as well.
Yeah. As a guy that's, you know, you look at his effect on the art styles for these games, and you're like, yeah, these are some of the most striking games around, especially for Half-Life 2 that is 21 years old at this point and still looks really good.
Yep.
That is a style that has held up really well, and yeah, this seems to be a very well-respected art director in the industry, and yeah, has unfortunately passed away at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. 52. Yeah, he was only 52 when he died. And yeah, you talked about, you know, his art direction. He basically had, he's been with Valve pretty much since they began, you know, developing games. But yeah, his, if people who love Half-Life 2 and don't even just consider that. Consider all the stuff that goes into like Gary's Mod. A lot of those assets were created under his direction. Basically, the sort of bombed out look of Half-Life 2, you can pretty much like heavily credit to him. You know, he grew up in he was born and he grew up until he was 17, you know, living in basically in a country that was behind the Iron Curtain, you know. So, you know, if you've played Half-Life 2 and you go around sort of City 17 and sort of the outskirts of it, and you see all that sort of old sort of rusted machinery and like old cars and stuff like that, that's pretty much all stuff that he got from memory. Because that's what a lot of those, like, Soviet and post-Soviet countries looked like, you know. And so, yeah, like, his, you know, considering the enormous impact, not just Half-Life 2, but, you know, the all the stuff that goes with Gary's Mod. And, hell, just, like as far as, like, modern meme culture, like, frickin' Skibbity Toilet and all that shit, a lot of that stuff, all those assets, most of them were done under his direction. Like, that's a hell of an impact to have on popular culture.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. Any other person here that passed away this week is Carter Lipscomb, who spent much of his life in the industry working as a QA person at Maxis on Sim Earth, Living Planet back in 1990, doing more QA work, working up to becoming a marketing director at Game Tech in 1994, and then doing more work there, and eventually worked his way to Sony in 2007, where he was PR director for PlayStation's platforms and products until 2018. He then joined Iron Galaxy as its business development specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Under the nickname as Dr. Business. His family published a statement on his Facebook page saying he fell out for the last time, even though I was healthy and everything was going great. I guess it was my time to go. Luckily, I was blessed to have my family nearby. Whether you knew me as Dr. Business, the boss of the special sauce, or just a brother from another mother, I truly cherished every experience we've shared and every laugh we've had because of each of you. I've been blessed to be on this journey with you, and yeah, very much was one of those people who worked all across the industry and probably knew tons of people throughout. Former Iron Galaxy CEO Adam Boys posted a message, I loved him so much, and we were also lucky to have met him and for him to have blessed our lives, adding RIP brother. Sean Layden at Sony wrote, we lost a brother today. The best of us, the light so bright, our eyes may never adjust to the dark. Godspeed, Carter. Save us a table. We shall raise glasses again.
Mm.
So, yeah. They're one of those guys that just had a big impact all across the industry. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. But, yeah. That's I think that'll do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Brandon Danner, for joining.
Always.
Yep. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about as it warms up and then becomes March next weekend. Mm-hmm. So things will be looking a little bit up for everything. I'm going to double check what we got for releases. I believe Monster Hunter Wilds is kind of the big thing this week. Not much else listed here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll have some more stuff to talk about next week. And thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know to check out the podcast and select strangers that are also ready to kill a bunch of monsters and use skin and mm-hmm. Body pieces to make sick armor. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye. Later, y'all.